they may be one of the happiest people on the surface of the earth. That's what anthropologists actually say. We're talking about people who speak the language of Piraha. They live in the Amazon rainforest in Brazil. Very small group of people, about 400 people. They use very simple language. Apparently, the alphabet has 7 consonants and 3 vowels. They don't have set words for numbers. They don't have words for colors. If they want to say that something is green, they usually say, it looks like a grass. Anthropologists say that they joke a lot. They laugh a lot. It seems like they're always happy. Every once in a while, they notice a change in their behavior, and they assume, anthropologists assume, that there is something different. Something must have happened. But those who spend time with them, the Westerners who spend time with them, still try to figure out, what are these people all about? Who are these people, really? My assumption is that no matter how happy you are, there are times in your life when you experience challenges. And I assume that Piraha people experience challenges in their lives as well. And they probably, even with their simple language, they somehow express it. We don't know yet how. Well, the thing is that no doubt in everybody's life, there comes moments and times when you go through difficulties, so much so that no matter how developed your language is, sometimes words fail you. Sometimes you can't really express it. There can come some such difficult moments in everybody's life as a result of turmoil that we will not be able to describe them, even though in my mother tongue, in Polish, we have plenty of words. And in French, there is plenty of words to describe it. And in Malayalam, there's plenty of words to describe it. And in English, there's lots of words to describe it. We will feel sometimes in our lives as if there is no one around us who understands us and no one who actually speaks our language, even though we try to express our deep feelings. That's how it was with them, a group of people like you and me. Listen to one of them who's speaking on behalf of a group of people. I'm talking about Psalm 137. By the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept when we remembered Zion. There on the poplars, we hung our harps, for there our captors asked us for a song. Our tormentors demanded songs of joy. They said, sing us one of these songs of Zion. But how can we sing the songs of the Lord while in a foreign land? If I forget you, Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its skill. May my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth. If I do not remember you, if I do not consider Jerusalem my highest joy. Remember, Lord, what the Edomites did on the day Jerusalem fell. Tear it down, they cried. Tear it down to its foundations. Daughter Babylon, doomed to destruction. Happy is the one who repays you according to what you have done to us. Happy is the one who seizes your infants and dashes them against the rocks. People like you and I, like all of us here, they had their lives, they had their dreams, work, home, children, rest, celebration and joy accompanied by the sound of instrument, and joyful songs expressing their praises to God. However, fate threw them far from home. It was the time of the Babylonian captivity, and that's where those who were taken from their homes against their will came to live. There was actually no consolation in the fact that the city in which they found themselves to live was located on the west, on one of the most fertile areas between the Tigris and Euphrates River. In a sense, we can say that Babylon back then was everything was happening. A city was inhabited by 200,000 people, very fertile land. It was easy to start a business. It was easy to run a business. That was the city where the law was actually, one of the ancient laws was invented. You know, all these famous hanging gardens, that's in Babylon. All of this were of little consolation to those people who, no matter how easy it was for them to live there, they were missing their home. And if many years later, people would say, all the roads lead to Rome. Back then, everybody was saying, all the roads lead to Babylon. This is where things are happening. This is where everybody wants to live. Well, almost everybody. One of the exiles wrote this psalm that expresses what actually others must have felt. And I'm assuming that this psalm also may express what you may feel like sometimes. The psalmist expresses the heart's longing for the place from which they were forcibly taken, for Jerusalem, the place where all the history was made, the place of safety, simply speaking, their home. Day by day, the author of this psalm thinks about the fact that this place where he found himself is not really a place for him and his family. So he and his friends, they live, they work, they go through the routine of the daily life, but they miss their home. So much so that it's impossible to sing even those favorite songs they've always sang and they've always enjoyed singing. You know, these words, "Play us your happy songs," which the captors actually ask, is like a blatant mockery thrown right into their faces. Because in this particular situation, it's actually asking for people to sing their happy song. It's stripping them of their dignity. And we too, like them, may have our favorite songs that we maybe sing or we hum to ourselves from time to time. But however, sometimes we don't actually, the time comes in our lives when we don't feel like singing and we don't feel like humming. These are such days and such situations in the life of each one of us when we do not only want to sing, but we do not want to sometimes even live. This is the case when longing takes over our hearts. And it's actually a short stretch from longing to loneliness. Sometimes this feeling is born on the ground of our life choices. We have made decisions in our lives that we regret. And we go back in our memories to those days and we long for those days where we should have taken a different decision. We should have made a different decision in life. Nothing can be done about it anymore. You can't turn the time back. But sometimes we are lonely because we were put in a situation beyond our control. Longing and loneliness is an unpleasant feeling. It's actually a slow withering away from the inside. It's a sickening of the heart and the depression of the soul. It happens when you think about someone or something so much that you are unable to do anything. When you're lonely, it's simply impossible to live and function normally. And when you go through these experiences, you will discover, or you may have discovered, that nobody speaks your language. Nobody actually understands you. Longing is a wife who waits for her husband to come home from a foreign peacekeeping mission. It's a husband who cannot accept the death of his wife with whom he had lived almost 60 years of his life. Or it's a parent who says goodbye to the child who lives so far away that it's impossible to see that child regularly. It's hard to describe longing. You have to experience it yourself to be able to understand it. And even if you understand it because you experience it, as soon as you try to share it with other people, you may discover that they may not be able to understand you. Such was the case with the father of a good friend of mine when I was a university student. My friend's mother died, and father and son were left alone. Sometimes the father had coffee with a woman from the neighborhood or with a colleague from work, but never seriously discussed marriage with any of them. He remained a widower for many years. Unexpectedly, one day he met someone. They started talking seriously about spending the rest of their lives together. Then she, one day when she was leaving for the sanatorium because of her health issues, they were acting like teenagers. She sat in the back of the bus, and the man, my friend's father, was waving to her, and she was waving to him, as it seemed like there was not enough time to say goodbye as the bus was departing. Neither of them thought that day that it would be the last day that they would see each other. On the way to the sanatorium, the bus crossed an unguarded railroad crossing directly under an oncoming train. The bus almost made it through, but almost sometimes makes a huge difference. And my friend's father was left alone again. In addition, now he was not only alone, but he was lonely. You see, this is how it is. Sometimes you can be at a point in life when no one will understand your language of loneliness. But there is another feeling, perhaps even more difficult to understand than loneliness, and that feeling is anger. The feeling that makes you sometimes clench your fists in readiness for an action that seems far from a Christian attitude. I don't know, when was it that you've read this psalm recently? The ending of this psalm is embarrassing and troubling. Even more so, the ending of this psalm is actually shocking. One doesn't really know what to make of it. We would like to believe that psalms are joyful, inspiring, encouraging us to worship God. So this passage brings consternation to our minds. And many God-fearers in church history didn't really know what to make of it. John Wesley said that some psalms simply don't fit Christian ears. Ugly, indecent thoughts and words have no place in the church of the Lord Jesus, he said. This is not exactly what we want to teach our children in Sunday school. It's not dignified to talk about these things in a church. A certain non-believer concluded, this passage, the ending of this psalm, is like perforated bucket. You can, as Christian, try to explain it in various ways, but a hole in the bucket simply will not hold water. However, the problem is compounded because this is actually not the only psalm that talks about things that are hard to understand. Psalm 10, verse 15 says, break the arms of the ungodly, O God, and the arms of the wicked. Psalm 11, verse 6, on the ungodly God sends a rain of glowing coals and sulfur. Psalm 58, God, break the teeth in their mouth. You see, when we turn to God as Christians, as the followers of Jesus, we don't want to sound like a Taliban fighter, and that's the overtone of these words. However, what is striking to me as I read these words is the sincerity and honesty with which the psalmist talks about his feelings. Interestingly, he's not talking about his feelings to another person, but he carries his words and his feelings straight to God himself. You know, it never occurred to me to smash heads of infants, even when I was yet not a Christian. But I must admit that I've never had to mourn the tragedy experienced by the father of a raped daughter, or a tragedy of the mother of a son who was clubbed to death, or a father who lost a son in a war. I've never had to experience that. Yes, the ending of this psalm is not easy to understand, but to overlook these words is to overlook all the women who experience violence, to ignore the feelings of all the abused, all the cheated people, the homeless, the victimized by the world in which they live, all these people who have experienced unimaginable tragedy and live with a torn heart. There may come times in everyone's life when we are lonely. There may come times in your life when you will be not only lonely, but even annoyed and angry as a Christian. Some people will then pretend that nothing happened. They will want to convince themselves that it's a closed case. They will not give themselves the opportunity to express their anger in words and will bury those feelings somewhere inside them. They will never express their anger, but will pretend that it is no longer there. Others will become victims. They will give up on life, on brave decisions, on other people. And knowing that they had been wronged, they will continue to live with their hurt deep down in their hearts. The psalmist gives another way, a way out. He doesn't recommend hatred, but gives expression to the feelings that are there inside. Only then, I believe, we can move on in our lives. An Old Testament scholar, Walter Brueggemann, aptly points out that true forgiveness is only possible when there has been a sincere articulation of anger beforehand. In essence, these awkward words are an expression of anger at what God is actually angry about. The psalmist opposes evil because God is the God who opposes evil. He exposes evil's true face, and the psalmist prays aloud to God. He takes his feelings seriously, knowing that God will also take them seriously and will lift us up. Because sometimes, friends, that's how it's in life, that only two people who can speak the same language are you and God, who understands your feelings and who understands and speaks your language. I don't know if you watch movies or not, and if you do, I don't know which ones, but I'm assuming you may have seen the movie Forrest Gump. If not, you might as well just watch it one day. In one of the final scenes, Forrest stands with Jenny in front of the house where she spent her childhood. That's the house where she's lost her female dignity and her ability to love. Enraged, she picks up stones and throws them toward the house, and one of these stones breaks the glass in the window. Then Jenny falls to the ground weeping. And Forrest, who has an IQ of 75, utters meaningful words. He says, "Sometimes there are not enough stones for what happened." Because that's the way it is. Sometimes not only can you be at such a moment in life when no one will understand your language of loneliness, sometimes you can be at a point in life when no one but God can understand your true feelings and your anger. But you may now be sitting here and deep in your heart, you may be asking yourself a question. Well, wait a minute. What about forgiveness? After all, it's one of the pillars of Christianity. It's an integral part of the Sermon on the Mount. Well, what about Jesus' prayer, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing"? Or what about the words directed by Jesus to Peter, who's asking, "Lord, how often should I apologize?" And the Lord said, "Seven times," and the Lord said, "70 times seven." The point is, this psalm does not lead us in a straight line to the Sermon on the Mount, to turn the other cheek, to love others, to bless those who persecute us. Because this psalm is not about forgiveness. This psalm is about honesty before myself and before God at a time when I'm standing with clenched fists, feeling alone and wronged. We have such a gracious God, such a loving God, such an understanding God, who we don't even have to say a word. He knows what we're thinking about. He knows how we're feeling. He knows our struggles, our dilemma as Christians. Sometimes we know all these Bible verses about forgiveness, but deep down in our hearts, we think, "I don't understand it." And you know what? God, in the boundless complexity of his incomprehensible being, allows us to have such honesty as we approach him. And perhaps it is so that in every person there comes a moment of pain, disappointment, loneliness, and maybe it is there that we meet God in a very special way that we've never met him before. Perhaps it is so that in every person comes a moment of anger, and maybe it is the moment where we meet God in a special way that we haven't met him before. Because God speaks our dialect, our language. You only have to really believe it. The act of faith makes it possible for us to bring our loneliness and our anger to the one who speaks our language, to God, with the confidence that he will take it seriously and he will not remain indifferent. You know, back in those days when psalmist wrote these words, God actually did not immediately answer the prayers of the exiles. For all intents and purposes, they did not get the answer in their lifetime. The answer, in its fullness, waited for the fullness of time when God the Father sent his Son, Jesus Christ. That's God's answer. It is in him, in Jesus, that God lived among us, experiencing all that we experience on a daily basis. Our joys and victories, but also our losses, our pain, our loneliness, abandonment, humiliation, violence. Jesus' suffering reminds us that when we suffer, we are not alone. He is with us. He has gone through the same things as each one of us, all the same things except one, except sin. To him we can trust, with him we can talk, because he understands us. And you know, sometimes he's the only one who can actually speak our language. So the main thought that I get from this psalm is that when you trust God, when you actually truly trust God, you can bring your loneliness and even anger to him, knowing that he will understand you and he will not remain indifferent. I was thinking about what I could share with you this morning, and this is a difficult psalm, actually, especially the ending of the psalm, but I'm thinking about it, especially in terms of what's happening in Poland now. Let me just give you a brief introduction to our family, and then I'll share briefly about what's happening in our lives and ministry. My wife and I, as you can probably not often, you get a person speaking with a strange accent, Polish accent, here's the opportunity once every 7 or 8 years. I was actually, my wife and I, we were born in Poland. We grew up in Poland. We got married in 88. And how 6 months later, we decided to leave Poland. Poland was still a communist country. And those were the days where, you know, average wages was about $15, $20 a month. These were the monthly wages. There was a shortage of supplies in stores. Just you had to wait 20 years to be able to buy an old vehicle, 15, 20-year-old vehicle. You had to wait, I don't know, 7, 10 years to get a telephone, like a landline hooked up to your apartment. So everything was difficult, and we felt like there's no future for us in this country. We better pack and leave. So we left Poland as newlyweds, thinking, well, we should improve our lives, you know. And my wife's cousin had been living in Edmonton at that time, and she agreed to sponsor us, to sign some immigration papers. So we left Poland, packed. I'm going to say, thank you for anticipating the question, Luke. I'm going to say it, yeah. We weren't Christians. I keep telling people that we were religious pagans, non-practicing religious people. Our background is Roman Catholic, actually. So we've sold all of our possessions, acquired huge amount of $350, which, you know, when you think of $20 per month, monthly wages, we're thinking, wow, we're rich, you know. So we left Poland, arrived to Austria. We couldn't go directly to Canada. We had to go to one of the West European countries and apply for an immigration status. And it was in Austria that we came across a group of missionaries from international teams who shared the gospel with us. And I was so proud that I figured, okay, I don't accept anything that they say. I'm going to prove them that they're wrong. And that was the first time I started reading the Bible, the New Testament. And I figured out, wait a minute, how come I'm reading about such a things? I've never heard about it before, you know. And there was a process of a few months that, you know, from the head knowledge, you know, just getting to know all these New Testament passages to the heart, it took us a few months to actually open our hearts and trust the Lord for salvation. So we left Poland as religious people, non-practicing Catholics, and we've arrived to Canada as born-again Christians. But we came here with an intent of one day moving back to Poland, excuse me, to be involved in church planting work. So we had lived in Canada and U.S. for 7 years altogether. Of these 7 years, 5 years I've spent in different Bible colleges to get my degree. And eventually we moved back in 96 to be involved in church planting. But other than church planting, thank you, Adam. I'm going to say, can you stand next to me? This is baby Adam. Let me introduce you, baby Adam. We have four boys. Adam is the tallest guy in our family. He's 6'3.5". I'm 6'1". We hug a lot. We're a hugging family. So I often introduce him saying, this is our baby, baby Adam. Baby's 19. He's the youngest member of the family. We have four boys. Bart, who's 32. Marty, who's 28. David, who's 27. And Adam. Two of our boys were born in Canada. My wife was pregnant with the third one when we decided to move back to Poland. So David and Adam were born in Poland. And I'm going to share a few things about this. So we actually live in, if you see this funny sounding word, Wrocław, you would say it Rakla probably, but Wrocław on the southwest, that dot in the southwest corner, that's our city of about 1 million people together with students. There's 700,000 people, but about 300,000 students, and officially 250,000 refugees in our city. Half a year ago, there was 4 million refugees. Now it's down to 3 million because some people decided to move back. Others decided to move elsewhere to Germany, UK, Scotland. But we still have a good number of refugees. And in our church of 50, 60 people, more or less, we have five refugee families now, four from Ukraine and one from Belarus. And going back to my message, you know, I cannot even think in terms of what these people are going through. Many of them lost their possessions. Some of them lost family members. There is a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. And, you know, I'm thinking it's just so easy for me to say, you need to forgive those who wronged you. It'd be so easy for me to say that. But when I look at them and their struggles, you know, I know, Lord, they need to deal with it. They need to come to you and express honestly their anger, disappointment, and, you know, they need to deal with that just directly with you. So we started as a church, you know, I'm at potluck today at picnic. I'll share more with those who want to listen, but just briefly, we've done a lot of work helping as a church, joining together with other churches. We help those who live in Poland. We send help, to Ukraine, to people who suffered, to the soldiers. We just got connected with a church who helps, a little Baptist church, that takes care of 35 orphans, and it's a long-term commitment. So there's lots of things going on, lots of things happening. But the good thing is that it's such a joy to see, like one of the pictures you're going to see maybe. So this is one of the family that we prayed for who decided to move to a different part of Poland. Then on couple, this is Marina. We will share. She stayed at our home actually, for some time with her kids. And Oleg, you may remember, we wrote in our letters about Oleg, who had been living with us for 2 months. He's in a different location now. We continue to pray for him. And this is actually a Russian-speaking Bible study that takes place in our cafeteria, in our church building. If you don't mind, I'm going to ask my wife to come and say a few words about the social store and women's ministry, because I don't want to turn things around and say wrong things, and she'll do a better job because that's her involvement, actually.
Hello, everyone. How are you today? Can I start from the beginning then? Because, you know, coming to refugees, we were refugees in Austria. So, when the war happened, my heart just went out to those people because I knew exactly how it is to live in a foreign country when people look at you and, we being Polish, living in Austria, we're treated as thieves, as the bad people, you know, coming into another people's country. So we were not leaving our country for war, but because someone gave us coffee and said, Jesus loves you, that's how we got to know Christ. That's how we, became Christians. So we've tried to do whatever we could, whatever I would meet just Ukrainian people in stores, I would just try to pass on them, smile, and said, I'm glad you're here. Because it's just little things that sometimes counts most, Just make someone's day better. So that's the beginning, And now I've been also thinking about the verse from Ephesians 3:20-21, that God does more abundantly than we pray, than we think, and to Him goes all the glory. And I would never think about myself right now that for the last 15 years, I've been running an organization, women organizations. There's 30 people with me that do those things. So just don't think about me that this is the social story. It's like just Beata, here. We've opened up in December last year a social store that's supposed to help people in difficult situations. So also Ukrainian families, that they will have their dignity to come and shop for lower prices. So this is the main goal of this social store. And this is the president standing there of our city. Everything is done with the government. And so the government gets the most praise and we do the work. That's how it works, I think, everywhere, right? Okay. So, yeah, we have this beautiful shirt. And some people come and they're very happy. The workers, the two ladies that work as clerksmen in the store, they're both Christians, loving God, with a just heart of servanthood. Both of them came from a very difficult situation. One of them is Polish, the other one is Ukrainian. They both love the Lord, and they have a difficult past coming out of drugs, coming out of difficult situation. Just tell you how much they love the people. After a few months, the store was open. The people started bringing gifts to the clerks, like baking a cake, bringing a little chocolate, and just thanking them for listening to them, for talking to them. So this is, we call this, that this is something, this place is more than just a store. And that's the way we see it. All the churches in our city pretty much participating, giving the volunteers and also giving money that the store will be able to actually keep on going. So that's how it works. Conferences. So we're back to the organization that I run. 15 years. This year we're going to have a 16th conference in October. And it's been always in my heart to share the gospel. And since Polish people, They view evangelical Christians as a sect, sadly, but this is the truth. From the beginning, and I think part of that was learned that I've learned here, you know, just bring the people to a neutral ground. So we're doing our conference in hotels, not in churches. Women's conferences, yes. We've never wanted to be associated with, let's say, Baptist church or a brother church. We wanted to be associated with Jesus Christ and Him bringing, you know, the salvation, you know, bringing the good news to Polish women. And try always to encourage the Christian women, you know, to bring their non-Christian friends that they were witnessing to. And that's what is happening. So, which is, just about 350-100 people every time, up to, you know, like 500, depends which place we were doing the conference. And it's always a place to worship. Here's the picture from a movement that is going for the, I think, last 5 years in Poland. The evangelical Christians came together and created this movement that tried to bring together all the churches, evangelical believing churches, to pretty much show the people in Poland that there is more than to Christianity than just Catholic Church. They're not the only Christians, right? Because when you think about Polish person, you think Catholic person. And and usually that's why we evangelicals are viewed as sect, because they don't know. So this is one of the things. And our church and also my organization, you see just few of the women. It's not the 30, all of them, but that's the women that I work with. Wonderful, wonderful women. So I'm really thankful for them as well. Okay, I think that's it. Okay, church, it's your turn. Thank you.
Well, the church, when we moved back to Poland 27 years ago, I was thinking we were determined to be involved in planting churches, not just one church. And back then, I was thinking, being in my late 20s, I was almost 30, I was thinking, okay, I speak the language, I know the culture, I have good biblical theological education, what else do I need, you know, to be involved in church planting? Well, quickly, we realized that more is needed. Like, we needed a team. There was just us, the two of us. Then one family joined us 2 years later. But Poland is such a dry land. It's a spiritual desert. And it's so difficult to plant a church in a country where there's lots of religious people, but a very small percentage of born-again Christians. Statistically, it's probably around 0.5% of the Polish population. So our desire was to plant different churches, but we got stuck in this one church in our city that we've been part of for 27 years. And we've had different stages, you know, some people leaving Poland for work, getting married, you know, deciding to go to a different church and stuff like that. So, you know, peacefully parting the company. So, you know, every time we lose a few people, I'm saying, Lord, you know, I'm not keen on big church, like we don't, but send us more people so that we can share the load. Like my friend, a friend of mine said on one occasion, if I had a choice, I'd prefer to be in a big church than in a small one, because in a small one, you have to work really hard. Okay. But finally, after all these years, by the grace of God, we've seen two more churches established. So you're going to see on those pictures. This is our picture taken at our church retreat. We have church retreats, weekend retreats once a year. And then probably the next two slides, if I recall correctly. Oh, no, I'm going to tell you about these men. So a few examples of what's happening. This man was mocking Christianity years ago, literally mocking, just laughing out loud, you know, into my face. Today, he's functioning almost as a deacon in our church, very much involved. But before that happened, he's gone through a divorce. His wife left him. Then there was a divorce. Then they lost a home. Then two of their teenage daughter got depression. And finally, you know, the time came in his life when he started thinking about it. And it's a long process. So the end result today is that he's got good relationship with his two daughters. The wife is living abroad. One of the daughters lives in UK, the other one in Poland, getting out of depression and being very much involved in our church, in our worship team. And then the woman, this is a family, two kids. When we met them, they were living in a common law relationship. They wrote us an email asking us some questions about Christianity. As soon as we got to know them, we discovered that they both come from from dysfunctional homes. The mother of the lady was a local alcoholic in a small village in the eastern part of Poland. It's such a beauty and such a joy to see those two married, having two kids, being involved in the church, and just, you know, the attitude they have towards the people and the way they approach their kids is just, I'm thinking, wow, Lord, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. And then there is a lady, she reminds me of a Samaritan woman because she had been married 5 times, divorced 5 times, 5 kids, each child with a different person. She runs a huge cosmetics company, and she's shared her testimony on numerous occasions. She witnesses to people, to her family members. She has reestablished relationship with her former husbands and invites them and their new wives to her home for Christmas and for Easter. And for me, it's like, I don't understand it. I don't know how she does it, you know, having all these former ex-husbands present for a Christmas celebration. But she does it, witnesses to the people. So folks, in terms of miracles, you know, it's not like we have people trusted the Lord on a weekly basis, but every once in a while we have these stories, and I'm thinking, Lord, this is why we continue in Poland. This is why we're still part of this ministry. And then in Tarnów, which is southeast part of Poland, we just commended a few years ago one of our families, Jarek and Ania, who are planting a church there, and there's about 20, 25 people in that church. Very difficult area of Poland. And then the second church plant is in the southwest of our city, in the suburbs. And Basia and Karol are our church planting family. And, you know, churches often divide. I'm just happy to share with you that there was no division. There was a hive off. There was 4 or 5 families that without blessing and prayer left and decided to join this new church plant because they live in that area. So now we have this church that we have good relationship with, and we interact, and we think of doing things together. The next, I'm going to bore you to death with all these details. So let's just run these pictures. And if anything comes to your mind, you know, baptism and stuff like that, I'll be more than happy, folks, to get to know you better, spend some time with you at the picnic today. Because I know I may be talking about different things, and you may be interested in something completely different. So I prefer to just sit down with you and maybe answer your questions if you might have any. Thank you so very much for your faithfulness. Now, I know that some of you we've known for many years, like the Parkers. We first met them when their kids were, we say in Polish, we have this saying that you sit on a carpet and you put your legs down, you know, and you does it make sense? Like when you sit on the edge of the carpet and you know, like you look down. So their kids were this big when we first met them. Others we've met just this morning, but I would like to thank you all for praying for us, for supporting us faithfully, prayerfully, and financially. We appreciate it, and it makes it possible for us to continue being involved in all these different ministries. So that's it. What? My wife is laughing. She's smiling. She probably wants to add some. So you're gonna one of the last pictures. You're gonna see our family there. This is our celebration 25th anniversary, officially, legally as a church. You need to be registered in a church as a church by the government, you know, in order to function legally. And my wife can tell you more about the Christian bilingual Montessori preschool. Amazing thing. With 25 kids at the preschool, most of them come from non-Christian homes. They get to hear the gospel regularly. They read the Bible. There's a prayer time. There is a Bible story every single day. And now this school grew from the preschool to Christian elementary school grades 1 through 3. And so who knows what's going to be the next step. So this is a field trip that kids took. I continue to teach at the School of Biblical Discipleship. So you're going to see some of my students. And this picture was actually taken at the workshop on the how to interpret parables of Jesus. So there was a good crowd present at that event. And that's our family, the whole gang. So our oldest son from the left, Bartek, and his wife and our first grandchild, then Marty and Roxana, then us in the middle, then David and Deborah, who's just had a baby 2 weeks ago, and then, as you can see, baby Adam on the far right. and a special picture. You know, we're entering this new stage in our lives, empty nest thing. Okay, so I decided, okay, I should add this last photo of me and my son before he leaves our home. Thank you once again for your patience. We really appreciate you guys and love you guys. Let me just pray. Father, you are truly so good to us. Thank you for loving us, for saving us, for giving us new life. Thank you for your grace, as we have heard this morning. I cannot even think where we would be without you, Father. Thank you for the church here, for the church in Poland, for your church elsewhere. Thank you for all those great things that you do amongst us, in the middle of us. Sometimes we might wonder, where are you and why things aren't happening? But Father, you are truly working. You are truly saving people, one by one, different people, Father. And I just pray that you will give us patience, give us wisdom in terms of how to use our time, our resources. Father, help us to live our lives with a purpose, with a goal in life. And the goal is to give you the glory through our daily lives. Father, help us love you and love each other better, Father. And thank you for enabling us to love you and love others through your Holy Spirit, whom you have given us. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.